On this episode of The Big Number, we dive into the stats to try to answer these questions. Is Zach Edey really the Rookie of the Year favorite at this point? And secondly, which one of his teammates is going to be an all-star shoo-in? Is it Ja Morant or Jaren Jackson Jr.? We're going to have that and more coming up right now. Welcome to The Big Number. Welcome, welcome, welcome. I'm Tom Haberstroh. That's Dan Devine. We do this every Thursday. This is a holiday edition of The Big Number. We're ringing out the 2024 with a special Big Number on a player that I think, he's not Caitlin Clark in terms of his following, but I would say in terms of the college sports brand and being a college hoops superstar and having a very polarizing fan base. There's a lot of haters and a lot of stands around this player. We're going to talk about it in a little bit. Hey, remember, 5-star review, subscribe, tell your friends at your holiday parties. Make sure you tell them, go subscribe to The Big Number. We just had an awesome episode of Victor Wembanyama last week, 2 weeks ago. Go check that out. But Dan, what's going on, man? How's your holiday been?
My holiday's great. Children, family, everybody doing well. Merries and happies to you and yours all the way around, wherever the Haberstroh clan happens to be at any given point. But Tom, where I am today, I'm here in the dungeon bedroom here in Brooklyn, New York. I'm ready to put up some numbers. And if you're saying that there's someone with a lot of stands and a lot of haters, you're pointing to college basketball, and it's a big number. Maybe like 7'4", 300 pounds?
Yeah, that big. You're onto something here. You ready for the big number?
I am, but also I should let everybody know it's a peek behind the curtain. We did some pre-pro on this, so like I know who it is. All right, I didn't make a good guess, guys. I'm sorry. I want to enter 2025 not lying to you as the listenership. So
did you just break the fourth wall? Is that what you just did?
I mean, I got to start. It's like I'm exactly like Deadpool. I know I'm in a movie, and also some other things that we probably shouldn't talk about on a family podcast. But Tom. I know, they know that I know, and I know that they know. So now, can you let me know what today's big number is?
It's 15. This week's big number is 15. Listen to this stat right here.
It's
about
like three five-star reviews. Oh, I'll add it up.
15. That is the number of consecutive games that Zach Edey has posted a positive figure in the plus-minus column. 15 straight games with a positive plus minus. Now, what does that mean? That means that when he's on the floor for the Memphis Grizzlies this season in 15 straight games, the Grizzlies have won his minutes. They've outscored the opponent with Zach Edey on the floor. 15 straight games, Dan, is not only the best for any player this season, 15 straight consecutive games with a positive plus minus in that column. It's also the highest, the longest streak for any rookie since we've tracked this stat in 1996. Think about that.
Wow. A lot of good players have been rookies since then.
A lot of rookies since 1996. And you know what? I don't think many people saw this coming, is that this guy would be a winning player as soon as he stepped into the league. And you might say, hey, one game plus minus is a noisy stat. It is misleading. We should throw it out. You're looking at the clouds and you're seeing a dragon every time. I think one game is a total, you know, too noisy to pay much attention to. But when you're talking 5, 10, 15 games of Zach Edey performing in such a way that the Memphis Grizzlies are doing really good things while you're on the floor, and there has not been one coach who has gone into a game and said, hey, we need to not let Zach Edey beat us, or we need to not let the Memphis Grizzlies beat us in those Zach Edey minutes. And not one coach has successfully achieved that mission of not letting Zach Edey, when he's on the floor, beat them, because he has done that in every single one of these games. And Zach Edey, dude, he's looking good, Dan. Like, he looks like a mobile big man. Not like, he's not Victor Wembanyama out there. He's not as, I guess, skilled as Nikola Jokic. He's not as athletically imposing as Giannis or enough DeAndre Jordan in his prime where he's just dunking all over everybody. But Zach Edey is averaging 11 points and 8 rebounds in his, you know, rookie season. He's leading all rookies in plus minus, which kind of happens when you have this positive streak of 15 straight games. But right now he's the favorite at BetMGM for the Rookie of the Year award at plus 120. Yves Mesi is at plus 350, and Stephon Castle is at plus 375. So right now Zach Edey is the favorite for Rookie of the Year now that Jared McCain has been injured, and then you have Reed Sheppard and Zachary Risacher not really showing out as top three picks. But Zach Edey with the Memphis Grizzlies has been on a tear, and I think the Memphis Grizzlies are really underrated right now. They're number two in the East, in the Western Conference. They're a team that has been super deep, playing a style of basketball, and we'll get into this later, that is very unique. They go 13 deep on any given night. Ja Morant has been in and out of the lineup, and yet the Memphis Grizzlies are number two in the Western Conference, doing it on both ends of the floor while starting a rookie 7'4", 300-pound monster in Zachary Edey. So, Dan, I guess the question I'm going to pose to you is, do you think he should be the favorite for Rookie of the Year? And do you think he's going to sustain this for the rest of the season?
Well, yeah, I think a lot of that goes back to, it's been certainly an up and down, maybe as a charitable way to put it, start for the rookie class. You know, there have been players who have shown flashes, but relatively few of them who have done so in consistent minutes. Guys who have been playing a lot of minutes often are on bad teams and not really tilting the game one way or another. And some of the, as you mentioned, the guys at the top of the draft, like Risacher, has been a starter on a pretty decent Hawks team, but not certainly one of the breakout players there. Alex Sarr in Washington, like the next time somebody pays attention to what the Wizards are doing will be the first time in about a month and a half. You know, we wind up in, and Reed Sheppard, the numbers game, just how deep that Rockets team is, has not wound up breaking through. So Edey putting himself in a position where he can be a starting caliber center on a team of consequence. And then, as you mentioned, it's not just being there, it's being a positive contributor to it. I love that you bring this kind of stat, this kind of big number this week, because it was one of the first big numbers you did here at Yahoo, maybe even the first, was about a similar streak for OG Anunoby last year after the Knicks traded for him last season. And it got to that point of, it's not just about the individual game, whether your plus minus is consistent. On a long enough timeline, it tells a story that you are not taking things off the table, that you're being an additive presence. And for Edey, you're absolutely right to note, there were a lot of questions about whether that could be true for him, given his physique, his size, and the challenges he was going to face. You're not going to be able to just dump the ball into the post to him 30 times a game anymore, and he's going to have to guard pick and rolls out on the perimeter and guard opposing offenses in space. And so far, Memphis has been an elite defense with him on the floor. They've been consistently better in his minutes. He has fit into the structure of, as you mentioned, a pretty interesting Grizzlies offense that isn't just put that guy on the block and let him post up, or just let him set a ball screen for Ja Morant and let him get downhill. He's had to do a lot of different things, and he's done all of it at a really, really high level. I think barring continued injury or unavailability, he certainly deserves to be up at the top of that list, because I don't think what we're seeing from him is like unsustainable level of play. He gets the ball. He's got great hands. He can finish near the rim. Hasn't been taking a ton of threes, but he's been able to knock down the ones that he's stepped out on. And he looks comfortable defending against real NBA offenses. I think what you're seeing is a legitimate player. Now, maybe not a 35-minute player in the playoffs, but if nothing else, he deserves the opportunity to prove it, because so far he's proved a lot of those doubters wrong.
He has. And there are a lot of doubters. And it felt like, to me, we're underestimating how much this guy has improved and gotten much more skilled and working on his conditioning. And in the first game of his NBA career, he fouled out, and kind of all of those demons were creeping in for all the people who got behind Zach Edey. He's like, no, he can hang at this level. He can move his feet. He can run the floor. He's not going to foul every time. And he's actually been much better as of late in that foul column. He's got four fouls total in his last four games. He's putting up really good numbers in both the points and the rebounds. Block shots, he's doing a good job there. He's moving his feet well. We'll get into kind of his transition game and how well he moves. But this Memphis Grizzlies team has the fastest average speed in the NBA, not just for this season, but in the player tracking era. And Zach Edey, you would never think that a team featuring Zach Edey, a plodding big man who looks like he could be one of these busts who's never going to make it in the NBA because he can't move up and down the floor. That Memphis Grizzlies team now has the fastest average speed in the player tracking era. So in the last 15 years, we haven't seen a guy or a team play this much up tempo, covering this much ground offensively. And if you look at Zach Edey's numbers, his miles per hour on the floor, he's moving a lot for a big man. He's actually eighth among like 30 seven-footers, qualified seven-footers in the NBA. He's eighth in average speed on the floor. So it's like, yeah, he's not going to outrun the Gazelles, but he's moving really well. I think he's holding his ground pretty admirably, a guy who is a lot more mobile, I think, than people give him credit for at Purdue. And it must be said, he's 22 years old, right? So like he's an old rookie, but he doesn't look overmatched on any given night in the NBA. He's hung there with Anthony Davis, Giannis, Brook Lopez. He's faced some of the best bigs in the league and held his own. I've been really impressed. The guy's good. I'm just going to say it. He's good. He's a competent, credible NBA starter from day one, and the Memphis Grizzlies do not look like this is a charity case where they're like, we're just going to play Zach Edey as kind of like a 5-10 minute gimmick to start the game, and then we're just going to get into our real stuff. He feels like an integral part of a team that is second in their Western Conference. So Zach Edey, he's doing a great job. And I think even if Jared McCain was healthy, I think he would be head-to-head for Rookie of the Year honors. And I think he should be the heavy favorite right now. Emphasis on heavy. Dan, we got four little numbers here right after the break that we're going to get into. A lot of Zach Edey, but also how he's fitting with his teammates and the overall picture of this really weird, really amazing Memphis Grizzlies team that everyone should be paying attention to right after the break. All right, Dan, it's time for your four little numbers. What's the first little number about the big number and big Zach Edey? What do you got?
Our first little number today is 40%. And it's not really all that little. It's a pretty big friggin' number because that is the Grizzlies' offensive rebounding rate when Zach Edey is on the floor, according to Cleaning the Glass, which strips out garbage time numbers. That would lead the NBA, that 40% mark, by a ludicrous margin. Like, it would be head and shoulders above every other team that's great at crashing the offensive glass. And as it turns out, keeping a 7'4", 305-pound guy with great hands off the boards, pretty hard to do. It requires multiple people. And then that also opens up opportunities for other Grizzlies to go in and get the ball. So it's not just that Edey himself is grabbing all those rebounds. It's that his presence demands attention that then allows other people to go in and get the ball. And he's sixth in the NBA in boxouts per game. The Grizzlies have grabbed the rebound 100% of the time when he has boxed out. Again, hard to get around that guy, hard to get the ball up over the top of him.
What was that stat?
He is sixth in the NBA in box outs per game. So again, he's averaging 8 rebounds a game himself, but he's up in the top, near the top 5 in box outs per game. When he boxes out and he's got the box out, the Grizzlies get the ball 100% of the time. What? It's sort of like having a large fence or like the ice wall from Game of Thrones. It's difficult to get up over that. And then whatever is on the other side of it tends to stay there. Obviously, it is a good thing to be elite at any aspect of the game, but this particular one, offensive rebounding, Tom, why is it important for this Grizzlies team to be so good on the glass?
Well, a lot of it is they're playing so much in transition, and it's so hard to like box out your guy or crashing the boards or finding your guy to box out when you're scrambling in transition, and so much of it is just like an open free fall. So when you got a guy who's 7'4" and he doesn't look like a rookie out there, he's huge. He's like Yao Ming big out there.
It's the number one point of comparison. You look at him and you're like, what if Yao didn't have foot problems? Is kind of what, and not saying in terms of like the quality and the skill or whatever. Yao is obviously an absolute marvel, but in terms of the way the movement looks, it's the only real one-to-one that I can think of.
It is. I mean, like when you look at this guy play, he makes just about everybody look small. Like even going against Wemby, I'd imagine like Wemby next to Zach Edey, it isn't going to be as crazy as when it's like, you know, Bam Adebayo trying to guard Wemby, right? Zach Edey's huge and he's thwarting a lot of these lobs. Like he's so big, not just on the offensive boards, but like when teams are like, think they have daylight for a lob, he just like reached. There was one earlier in the season when he just went up and grabbed the ball with two hands. I think it might have been DeJounte Murray who threw the lob to Eve Misi, and it was just like, I'm just going to grab this with two hands. It's so disrespectful. He's that big. And offensively, when you're looking at Ja Morant with the kind of Kobe assist, Kurt Goldsberry coined the Kobe assist. It's such a brilliant concept, which is like sometimes the best way to score is to like draw a bunch of defenders attacking the basket and then like missing, not on purpose, but you're okay with missing a tough layup because you know that you got Andrew Bynum behind you or Lamar Odom behind you, Pau Gasol behind you, and they're just going to do a putback dunk. So much of what the Grizzlies do this year is like, we're going to just throw this off the glass. And you know what? Jaren Jackson Jr. or Zach Edey is going to clean this up. Santi Aldama is going to clean this up. We've got guys who are going to crash the boards, but Zach Edey, he's so big and he's hard to move around. When you look at the numbers, he's averaging the most offensive rebounds per game since November 1st. The NBA, all players, he has more offensive rebounds per game than any other player in the league since November 1st. It's 4.9 per game. So another thing to put it in context, what does offensive rebound rate mean? Well, when you say 40% of offensive rebounds are being recovered by the Grizzlies when he's on the floor. So a missed shot happens, it's usually what, around 30%, somewhere in that range. One out of every three missed shot gets a second chance opportunity. Well, when Zach Edey's on the floor, that goes from 30% to 40%. And even better, there's a stat on pbpstats.com, which is an invaluable resource. You got to check it out. Where you can see like in the Kobe assist column that when Ja Morant misses a shot, the Grizzlies, when they get the offensive rebound, they're shooting 75%, effective field goal percentage is 75% when Ja Morant misses the shot and then they get the offensive rebound. That's second highest in the NBA for a guy's missed shot getting offensive rebound and what happens next. So basically, those Ja Morant missed layups, right? Doesn't happen a lot, but it's basically a made layup now because the Grizzlies attack the offensive board so well with Zach Edey on the floor that you're turning these half court, even transition, all these offensive opportunities with Zach Edey on the floor. He's just a vacuum. And even if he's not getting it, dude, like you said, on those box outs, 100% rebound rate when he is boxing out his guy, that is absurd, man. That's such a good find.
And yeah, well, thank you so much. And with the Grizzlies and their offense, you know, the sort of the history of the Grizzlies offense, especially in the Ja Morant era, there's been, whether it's Jonas Valanciunas or Steven Adams, these like giant maulers who, yeah, they maybe were not a great shooting team, but we're going to get more bites at the apple. And Edey fits very snugly into that tradition where, I mean, even though the shooting is better on the Grizzlies this season and there's more guys who can fill it up, if you don't get it, he creates that other opportunity. And the level of efficiency, as you mentioned, goes through the roof. Half court offense for the Grizzlies, they're about a league average team in terms of their first shot offense, around 96 points per 100 possessions in the half court. On putbacks with Edey in the game, that's up over 130. Like it just, it's like the possession and a half in terms of what they can score together. So having that guy to be able to turn that garbage into gold, shouts out to Mark Zumoff, is invaluable for the Grizzlies. But you know, you mentioned Zach Edey and transition, and I think those two things where it's like you wouldn't necessarily assume that a guy that big that heavy would be able to be part of an up-tempo offense. Our second little number here is 18.3. It's the share of Memphis's offensive possessions that come in transition when Edie is on the floor. That would be number two in the NBA for the full season. So they are not really, like, they're taking, the foot comes off the gas a little bit, but not a whole lot. They do run more and score more efficiently on the break when he's off the floor. But having them out there has not taken them out of the up-tempo game that has been such a big part of their offensive identity. And he's been a participant in it too. You know, you watch the Grizzlies, you watch him on the floor. He runs the floor better than you'd think for a giant. He's like rim running ahead of the play or trailing in transition on the secondary break. He's scoring 1.46 points per possession finished in transition. That's a 95th percentile mark, according to Synergy Sports. So he gets the, but I mean, some of it is as simple as see ball, get ball, giant hands, and then you move one step. And like Wemby, you're within arm's reach of the basket basically once you get inside half court. So questions about foot speed, athleticism, et cetera, were some of the biggest concerns facing Edie entering the draft. To this point, how would you evaluate how he has answered those critiques? Or do you still think it's like a little bit early to be able to come down definitively one way or the other?
I think he's answered all of those questions so far. I mean, when you look at him in transition, it doesn't look like he's, you know, out of his depth. Like, he's moving well. I think it's we just have this kind of antiquated view of like a 7'4", 300-pound dude and say like he can't hang in today's up-tempo NBA. But him as a trailer, like he's done a bunch of times where he's as a trailer just camping out at the three-point line and hits that three at the top of the key, which has been money for him this year. He's shooting 9 of 21 from three. I think that's about 42.9%. This season, a lot of that is trailing, is just in that transition things in that secondary break, kind of he is trailing the play and he has that wide open three pointer and he hits that. But also Purdue didn't really play up tempo. And so it was almost like a matter of like, we didn't know if he could do this or not because they didn't really go to that. They knew they needed him for 35 minutes a game. The Grizzlies are like, dude, we only need you for 20, 25 minutes a game. We're not going to run you into the ground. It's fine. So go run out. He's been able to run in transition. The transition defense has been good. And a lot of times it's weird. Like I'm watching his highlights or watching his tape and it's like, he'll have times where he's beating bigs down the floor and he's getting a kick ahead pass and he's dunking it. It like this dude doesn't look like he's playing a different brand of basketball. You look at the numbers, this guy has already scored this season more points in transition than he did in his final two seasons at Purdue combined.
That's wild. That's really wild. Especially because you mentioned the differential in minutes. Like he was basically never came off the floor for Purdue, and he's only played 20 games, 21 minutes a game. Like, that's incredible. That's really, really incredible for him to be able to hang in that style shift.
35 points in transition this season. Okay, in the previous two seasons combined at Purdue, he had 34. Okay, so 35 points in transition in 20 games played. At the college level, he had 73 games played. It just never happened. They never went to this. And in college, it's a different brand of basketball. You don't have Ja Morant on your team. And also, I think, you know, Zach Edey might have been just didn't have, I don't know, he didn't need to do this because they knew they needed him for 35 minutes a night, right? In that national championship game, I don't think he came off the floor in the second half. And you just can't do that when you're 7'4", is play that up-tempo brand of basketball. So I think it's fascinating is that the Memphis Grizzlies not only drafted this dude, but they're using him in ways that feels like this is sustainable. And you know what? You can do two things at once. You can have Ja Morant running the fast break and beating everyone down the floor. And also, if that doesn't work, if he doesn't have everything and Desmond Bane doesn't have something there, they can pull back and be like, oh, we're going to run this offense. And man, it is such a crazy offense what they're doing this season. And I do think that Zach Edey in transition, very underrated storyline this year. He's not doing as many post-ups. He had 66% of his scoring last year was in post-ups. That's sliced down to a quarter of that. He's doing a lot more cutting, a lot more transition, and basically he's playing a lot more Memphis Grizzlies basketball.
and really important to remember, like, just because a guy didn't do something doesn't mean he can't, right? One of those things that scouting and development is such a huge differentiator, and the Grizzlies have been incredible at that throughout this era. Also, it's not exactly a one-to-one for foot speed, but on the other end of the court, he's given up 0.849 points per possession against pick and roll ball handlers. Completely, like, super serviceable, good 60th percentile mark. Like, all you, if you can put him back there and drop or have him up a little bit higher on the ball, they're not giving away the store when ball handlers attack him downhill. So he's holding up in terms of his athleticism and foot speed on both ends so far.
His ISO defense numbers, I think on post-ups, he's been attacked in the post-up, which is a bad idea first off. Trying to score against that dude in post-ups. And people have tried. They're one of six. There's only six possessions, according to Synergy Sports, where he's been attacked in the post-up. Anthony Davis tried a couple times. There have been the only one who scored on him is Daniel Gafford, and then he tried to do it again, and he ended up taking like a 20-foot fadeaway, which Daniel Gafford, maybe not the best idea, is doing like a Kobe Bryant turnaround mid-range fadeaway. Probably not the best use of your offense. But like ISOs, there was a time where like LeBron tried to go ISO on him. DeJounte Murray tried to go ISO on him. Anthony Davis sized him up one-on-one. And it's, dude, he's doing fine. Like, he's not the best, but when you watch him out there, so many times it's just like, oh, that guy is huge. Why am I doing this? He's massive.
Well, it goes back to, like, don't take things off the table and add things to it. And then, you know, you look up in 15 games in a row, your team has won your minutes. So pretty good example there of why he's been so successful. You mentioned earlier, you know, you've got Ja Morant on your team. Let's talk about the other star that Zach Edey has been playing with so far. Our third little number is plus 23.59. We went to 100th place for this one, Tom. That is the Grizzlies' net rating when Edey shares the floor with Jaren Jackson Jr. this season, according to PBP stats. When Edey plays without Jaren Jackson Jr., still positive, but only plus 2.5 points per 100. So put another way, Zach Edey's plus minus for the season, plus 126 in 438 minutes. With Jaren Jackson on the floor, it's plus 118 in 220 minutes. Yeah. So the bulk of this, almost all of it, comes down to the time that he has spent with Jaren Jackson Jr. Because, Tom, one really good way to win your minutes is to play them with really, really, really good players. And that's who Jaren Jackson Jr. has been so far this season.
I think this is the whole idea about Jaren Jackson Jr. is he's better at the four than he is at the five. He's not a starting center. And they knew that a couple of years ago with Steven Adams starting at the five. And he goes out, Jaren Jackson Jr. wins Defensive Player of the Year, blocking three shots a game. Not an elite rebounder. Not a guy who can reliably, competently guard fives without fouling out. And so they're moving him to the four with Zach Edey. And he's performing at an elite level. Like, his foul rate is way down, Jaren Jackson Jr. He's not blocking as many shots, but he's staying within himself. And I think he's much better suited playing at the four next to a guy like Zach Edey or Steven Adams. And he's flourishing in that role. You know, you talk about Ja Morant and the injuries that he's faced this season. Zach Edey has been in and out of the lineup 20 of the team's, I think, 33 games he's played. Jaren Jackson Jr. is the constant. Like, they are dealing with a lot of injuries this season, not nearly the extent of last year where it was insane. All-time just horror show in terms of the injury report. But they've had a constant in Jaren Jackson Jr., and he's done very well, and he's fit in seamlessly with Zach Edey or the other way around. I think this is, like, it's weird to say that there's a plug and play here with Zach Edey, who seems like such a transformational player. Like, you can't just plug and play a guy like that into your offense. But the one team that you would think Zach Edey doesn't work well with is the Memphis Grizzlies. And it's fit in seamlessly, not just with the Grizzlies, but also Jaren Jackson Jr.
And I think part of it is because maybe it's like the find the silver lining in the gray cloud of all those injuries that you mentioned last year. And which, by the way, the Grizzlies still do lead the league in games lost to injury so far this season. And that's only going to keep going up with Ja Morant at the week to week with the shoulder sprain and Santi Aldama with an ankle injury and seems like the reason you go 13 deep is because you don't have half your roster half the time. So it's worked out well for Memphis, but I'm sure Taylor Jenkins and the rest of that coaching staff would much prefer just get all the dudes back and then we see what we've got. But Jaren Jackson Jr., because he had to stretch his game so much last season and there was so much more, have a higher usage game while also having the defensive responsibility, that team was decimated and they were still a pretty good defense. And he was the linchpin of that. He's now just a really balanced, high-level dude. This season, Jaren Jackson Jr., 21.6 points, 5.9 rebounds, 1.8 assists, 1.7 blocks, 1.5 steals per game, all of that in 28 minutes a night. He's 56% on two-pointers, 35% on threes, 82% at the line. And as you mentioned, the foul rate is down. You add that all up. It's also because it's contributing on the offensive end and on the defensive end. Estimated plus minus, we use this stat a lot here on the big number, dunksandthrees.com. Taylor Snar has developed this sort of wonderful all-in-one plus minus metric. Jaren Jackson Jr. is eighth in that metric this season, just below Giannis, just above Stephen Curry. So you can say, I mean, reasonable people can argue and say, well, how does that line up with, you know, this other flavor of plus minus or this other sort of, you know, estimated in terms of what their value and their value of a replacement player, their on-court impact, reasonable to disagree. But I think that you can look at this and say, we've harped on the value of unicorns on this show too, right? We just had the Wemby episode. Triple J is one of four players in the league with more than 50 blocks and 53s. He's creating more offense. He's finishing at a higher clip. He allows you to play that mammoth guy because he can be that off-ball rover coming over and blocking shots. Block rate down, steal rate up. He's still creating these sort of events on defense. I think at this point you're looking at, it's not just like, is Jaren Jackson Jr. going to make the All-Star team? I think it's now we're getting pretty close to like barring any injuries. He should definitely be there. To me, the more interesting question maybe going forward, and we're a long way away from it, is Jaren Jackson Jr. going to make an All-NBA team this year? And if he keeps up this level of play and the Grizzlies keep having this level of success, he's certainly going to put himself in that conversation.
Yeah, it reminds me of like De'Aaron Fox and Sabonis a couple of years ago when they were the number two seed or three seed in the West. And I think this is Memphis Grizzlies. If they're going to be the number two seed with Ja Morant playing 50 games, you're going to have
to go somewhere.
You know, like Jaren Jackson Jr., the flowers there. You're going to have to. And with all the injuries to stars, and if he's going to continue playing 90% of the games with this kind of production, he's been great, especially next to Zach Edey. And like, he doesn't have to be the premier rim protector that he was a few years ago when you got a guy like Zach Edey, who, by the way, here's a list of guys that he's blocked already. Zach Edey, who can't move, by the way. No one can.
Right.
The guy can't move laterally.
Big, stiff, slow feet, cinder blocks. Go for it.
He's blocked Anthony Davis, Damian Lillard, DeJounte Murray, Andrew Wiggins, Jamal Murray, Cam Thomas, Ivica Zubac, Alperen Şengün, and here's my favorite one, Stephen Curry. He blocked Stephen Curry on a three-pointer, okay? This is what happened. Stephen Curry got like a switch, right? I think Draymond set the screen, got the switch at the top of the key, tried to attack him. Zach Edey got in front of him, walled him off. And so Steph Curry did what? He did the step back, get behind the three-point line, and take this ridiculous three-point shot that he has done so many times where guys just cannot close out that airspace, and he creates that kind of sidestep, step back, and hits the three. Except Zach Edey was like, no, I'm going to block this. Like Steph Curry, you remember when Steph Curry, like, it was the hardest shot to block in sports. Like, you could not block a Steph Curry three-pointer, even though he's 6'3". It's not like he's, Dirk Nowitzki out there. And yet Zach Edey has already done that this season, blocked a Steph Curry three-pointer. Like, players will do that. Their entire careers will play and guard Steph Curry and never block him once. And Zach Edey already, 20 games in his NBA career, has blocked Steph Curry. So another cool thing about playing next to Jaren Jackson Jr. is, like, this dude, Zach Edey, he will be that rim protector and also that three-point line protector on occasion.
Yeah, if he needs to get out there, he knows he's got a defensive player of the year behind him, right? And also, it's just good to know, Steph got that up over Wemby in the gold medal game, right? Zach Edey coming out there and being like, you know what? If I wasn't just going into my rookie season, I was playing for Team Canada, things would have gone a little bit differently out there in France. I'm just saying. Maybe just next saying. Time, Zach Edey, you do get out there and the balance of power shifts to our neighbors to the north, America's hat. Let's go to our fourth little number, one. Legitimately little number, one. That is how many teams in the NBA rank in the top five in both offensive and defensive efficiency. And Tom, let me see if you've been paying attention. Which team do you think it is that ranks in the top five in both offensive and defensive efficiency so far this season?
I know. Is it the Memphis Grizzlies?
Tom Haberstroh, you've done it again. It is, in fact, these Memphis Grizzlies, fifth in offense, fifth in defense. I was sweating. I'm not going to lie to you. Another look behind the curtain. With the way that the Mavs and the Nuggets were playing last night, I was like, somebody's going to knock them out and it's going to be sixth and fifth and my cool number is going to be all screwed up. But Denver went nuts. Dallas dropped down. Memphis stayed in fifth. Perfect. Nicely done. So, fifth in offense, fifth in defense. That kind of balance and that kind of high-end play, typically the mark of a title contender. So with this offense, and you know, this may be a good place for us to get into how different their offense is, and with the defense, as we mentioned, Jaren Jackson Jr. back there, but also ability, like so many different wings, so many different guys you can play in combinations for Jenkins to go to. How seriously do you think we should be taking Memphis as a title contender this season?
Yeah, I think you have to. The way they play is so weird. It is so strange. Draymond Green paid homage to it on a press conference, was just like, they do things that we've never seen before. He doesn't know how to scout it. It's so unpredictable. It is one of those things that, like, on a regular season game, you just can't scout it enough, like game plan around it, because the game, there's too many games, just so hard to game plan against the Memphis Grizzlies offense. I don't really know. I don't know what this will translate to. Does anyone know with like certainty how this will translate? And for those who don't know, Dan, can you give the stat and how people can watch what the Memphis Grizzlies do offensively that is so unique?
Sure. So right off the top, we'll say Ben Taylor at Thinking Basketball does a wonderful job as a sort of video essayist in creating content about the NBA. He posted a video recently that sort of analyzed the way the Grizzlies are playing offense. And one of the kind of other sub numbers here is 30, which is dead last in the NBA. That's where the Grizzlies are in terms of the share of their offensive plays that are finished out of the pick and roll or in dribble handoff. The whole rest of the league is running tons of pick and roll and tons of DHO, and the Grizzlies have shifted and gone the other way, and they don't want to bring a second defender to the ball. Like, they're not running ball screens as often as possible because they want to stretch you out, open up driving lanes. They are number one in the NBA in drives per game, and they want to open up driving lanes for guys to get downhill. And then there's sort of the concept I've seen compared to kind of a wheel. Somebody drives and there's like a roll and replace kind of relocation. And now I'm looking like Doctor Strange, I realize. But there's a sense of like it's perpetual motion, but it's not exactly the same way the Warriors did it, because it's not just like two off-ball shooters. It's kind of everybody figuring out how to flow to the corner, or how to replace in the dunker, or how to move along the arc to replace that driver and create these open lanes. And there's some similarities, I guess, in terms of where what it gets to, like the Quinn Snyder offenses in Utah, where it was like, get you in the blender, right? That idea of you get a little bit of an edge and then you kick to the next guy who creates an even a little bit more of an edge. And then before you know it, it's a layup or it's a wide open shot. There's been a lot of that for the Grizzlies, so that even though they're not near the top of, or they're at the bottom of the league in those like tried and true actions, top five in offensive efficiency, up near the top of the league in team field goal percentage, points in the paint, assists per game, and drives per game, among other categories. So it's, and you mentioned Draymond giving that sort of tip of the cap of like, it's weird and nobody else is playing like it. The Warriors are a great example of a team where that weirdness has power, right? Like, as much as fans understandably sometimes will rail against the Warriors and rail against Steve Kerr for not running enough pick and roll with Steph, when you get into series very often, teams are not ready to play the way the Warriors play. And so the idea of the Grizzlies being a team where in years past, in playoff series past, their half-court offense has bogged down a little bit. Teams have been able to sit on the jaw, pick and roll. They didn't have enough shooting to spread you out. The idea of going in with a different plan of attack that teams might not be prepared for to give them something else to think about, I think there's something to that. Now, you're right to say like whether that holds up in a playoff series against an elite defense that's got 2 weeks to scout it, I don't know, remains to be seen. But if nothing else, the idea of trying something different, I think, is pretty interesting.
Can we just say Jay Huff? Awesome.
Yes, we can say Jay Huff. How many great bald spotted reverse dunking big men do we see in the NBA? Not that many.
And he's slinging from three. Like, he's really skilled. And the guy can jump. He's got some bounce to him. Mm-hmm. He's got some flair. I think, like, I'm like looking at this dude. It's not quite Lin's sanity, but it's like, how are we so smart in the NBA? And yet guys like him just, like, pop up on, like, four different teams. And then he finds this one. And Memphis just kind of figures it out. And Jay Huff has been great. Laravia has been much better this year. They just have a lot of guys.
Go Deeks.
That's right. They need a lot of guys that, like, can competently run this system and listen to Taylor Jenkins, and they're doing it. And, man, I feel like, you know, when we talk about how everybody plays the same in the NBA, like, the Memphis Grizzlies are so off the wall crazy, and Zach Edey, Ja Morant, kind of Pumbaa and Timon, like, it doesn't really make sense. Like, how do you have those two guys on the same team? And they're just very surprising. I don't know. I just watched Mufasa with the girls, and it was actually good. I really liked the prequel Lion King story. That's why, it's Timon and Pumbaa. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes
yeah.
I go no, Pumbaa right. and Tumba, and I'm like, it kind of, like, scrambles my brain. But the idea of, like, Ja Morant and Zach Edey working together, and, oh yeah, there's Jay Huff and Santi Aldama. And it's like, this team is really fun. So are they a title contender? I think they are. In my book, they're a four-star contender. I do that every week at tomthefinder.com, where I do these title tiers. Memphis is up there. I really, really enjoy watching this team. They're super strange, super well-coached. And you know what? With the way that injuries have happened this season, why not? Why not put Memphis in that upper echelon of title contenders? Do you have anything else here? We've hit on, I think, a lot here, that what makes Zach Edey and the Memphis Grizzlies kind of, like, I don't know, an indie, just kind of this band that you just discovered that... I feel like the NBA fan, if you really want to, like, geek out on the league, you got to watch this Zach Edey, Ja Morant mutant team that's happening in Memphis.
Two things. I'll make them quick. Shouts out that we should say the name Jalen Wells, the other rookie that the Grizzlies drafted, second round pick, 39th overall, has, you know, was sort of not, like, lightly regarded. I mean, there were scouts that were fans of his, but he has instantly become a plug and play starter on the Grizzlies, up near the top of the, I think he leads all rookies in total points, total threes made, like, total field goals made. He has been a high end defender at the wing, versatile, and then also making shots, like, low usage, high efficiency, defends multiple positions, kind of exactly what you're looking for. And the Grizzlies nail another sub-lottery pick. I think seven of their nine most frequently played players, the guys at the top of their minutes leaderboard, all came after the lottery. So, like, Ja's there, obviously. Triple J's there. You know, success stories. Marcus Smart was a sixth overall pick, but a lot of their successes, middle of the lottery and down, and then second rounder undrafted, you know, Scottie Pippen Jr., you know, Jay Huff, as you mentioned, they've just continually find great players. And then bring it back to our big number, 15, the number of consecutive games for Zach Edey with a positive plus minus, easy for me to say. Haven't had my champagne yet. All told, the Grizzlies are outscoring opponents by 13.1 points per 100 possessions with Zach Edey on the court. That is tops among all rookies this season, and if it holds, would be the highest of any rookie in the play-by-play era, with the same, you know, minimum 15 minutes per game, minimum 15 games played. This is a level of impact for a rookie on the court we have not seen in the last 25, 30 years. It's not to say that he's the best, you know, individual player of any of those, but basketball is not necessarily about whether you are the best individual player. It is about whether your impact elevates the whole. And Zach Edey so far has done that, as off, I guess you would expect from a guy who is already up that high, and when he reaches his arm up, can already dunk.
That Jalen Wells stat that you mentioned about that starting lineup, can you surface that real quick?
Oh, of course,
It is ridiculous. That Jalen Wells, Zach Edey, Desmond Bain, Jaren Jackson Jr., and Ja Morant, we're not going to see them for a while. But when that new starting five has been on the floor, they've started four games or 3-1 in those games. But it was that Golden State massacre, right?
That's
one of those. What is the plus minus of that group, that five man lineup?
They are plus 57, which is the 10th highest plus minus in the NBA, and they have played 40 total minutes together. Sometimes the whooping of a trick, as happened in the Warriors game, can tilt your stats a little bit, and that's what has happened here.
Thank you for that. We're going out in 2024 on a high note. Except for my over under skills. We're going to talk about that after the break. A little tease there. I'm licking my wounds here. I'm looking forward to 2025. I'll tell you why after the break. Dan, we're really smart. Actually, you know what? You're really smart.
I've done better than that first thing you said.
Yeah, I've done a poor job this past week, couple weeks actually, since we did this show. I have surrendered the lead in our over-under competition. We have a scoreboard. Every week we bring in a couple more over-unders. We tracked them throughout the season. There have been 25 so far. Right now the scoreboard is of the 23 picks, you have gotten 15 of them right.
The big number this week is 15, and here I am with a 15-10 lead. This is so good for me. I'm like the Zach Edey of this podcast.
You are. Who does that make me? I can go with Jay Huff. I'll take Jay Huff there.
I love that for us. I really do.
Okay, perfect. I think the real message here is SGA. Or no, referees, you need to help me out here. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is now at 7.9 free throw attempts per game. The over-under was at 8. I flipped on that one. You're correct. You took the under. I took the over. Two other things flipped for me. Brunson and Kat, they are no longer averaging 50 a game. You took the under. I took the over. Thanks to Karl-Anthony Towns is now 24.7 points per game. Jalen Brunson's at 25.2, so that 49.9. Jamal Murray's gone a little bit of a heater recently. His effective field goal percentage has eclipsed the 50% mark. He is now at 50.6. So three things flipped from me to you, and now you have a 15-10 lead as we bring in the new year. But I will say, bring it back to the top. Victor Wembanyama, thank you. Thank you. You're making us look brilliant over here. We did a big number about how he is the only player in NBA history to average 3 threes and 3 blocks per game. Since that pod, he's averaged 5 threes a game and 5.7 blocks per game.
Tom, very quickly. Remember earlier we were talking, I was saying that Jaren Jackson Jr., like, he's one of four guys that's got more than 50 threes and 50 blocks. Yeah. Guess who leads the both of those lists?
It is Victor Wembanyama. It's the Elliot. Yeah.
97 threes and 102 blocks. So we're like 50 and 50, and he's doubling up that list. So yeah, he's lapping the field to a ludicrous degree.
The night after this show aired with Victor Wembanyama, he shot 7 of 15 from downtown. Then he went 4 of 8, 6 of 13, 6 of 16, 3 of 6, and 4 of 12. He's incredible. You said it. You're like, he might average 4 three-pointers a game. I don't know. Like, why would I put a governor on this dude? And you're absolutely right. So I was wrong. I took the under, which looks so stupid, on Victor Wembanyama's threes. He's now averaging 3.4 threes per game and 4.0 blocks per game. So he is very close to a 4-4 season, which is nuts.
Bananas.
So we got to add two more over-unders to this.
All right.
I got to close the gap. So we're going to do Zach Edey themed to keep it going with this this episode. For the first one, we're going to go with, is Zach Edey going to average a double-double? Right now, he's at 11.3 points, 8 rebounds per game. He's been averaging a double-double over his last 7 or so games. So can he keep this up where he's going to finish the season with a double-double average, 10 points, 10 rebounds? I'm scared now. I'm a little scared. I'm chasing. I felt like in my heart I want to say double-double, but 8.0 rebounds, he's got to average like 11.5 the rest of the way to turn that into a double-digit figure. I'm going to say under, only because of that rebound column. I'm going under on the double-double Zach Edey rookie campaign.
Yeah, I'm with you on the under. Not for any, I mean, as we mentioned, like it's a little bit more, his rebounding impact is a little more collective than individual. And it's actually, I was looking at, because I was like, maybe if he sticks in the starting lineup, that means, you know, more minutes, more opportunity. He's actually averaging more, about the same number of rebounds on the bench or coming off the bench as he has as a starter. It's a kind of 8.0 either way. And minutes per game, it's about the same, you know, a little under 22, a little over 22. So given the style the Grizzlies like to play, where it's like so fast, so balls to the wall all the time, so much relentless pressure on both ends of the floor, I don't think that he's going to extend. I don't think Jenkins is going to extend his minutes to a large degree. So I'm going to go under there. But I would love to see, like, show me what 30 minutes of a night of Zach Edey looks like. I think that if you could tell me he was definitely going to be up in that high 20s, you know, 30 minutes per game, I would feel more comfortable saying it. But I just don't think that that's in the plans for the way the Grizzlies want to play. So I'll take the under with you.
Can't believe we haven't mentioned it yet, but Zach Edey's out with a concussion. He took an elbow from Yves Mesi,
right,
and he's going to be out for a little bit. Hasn't returned to the floor yet. Hope he gets back on the floor. Just best of luck on his recovery there. I also think like they're probably going to ease him back 15, 20 minutes a game. And he's had, you know, a little bit banged up this year. I just think Zach Edey, if he finishes at 13 and 9.5, wouldn't surprise me. It's going to be tough to get over that 10 rebound plateau. Second one, so you're going under. I'm going under on that one. Second one I'm going to throw at you, his foul rate. We kind of did this with Karl-Anthony Towns, where Kat has fouled out twice in the last 2 weeks. He's just under the 10% foul out percentage that we set in the over-under. So I'm just teetering right below being correct on that, taking the over on 10% of his games. What we're going to do here with Zach Edey is 4.5 fouls per 36 minutes. He's at 4.7 right now. He's brought down his foul rate pretty tremendously since the beginning, you know, stage of the season. He's done much better of late. I'm going to go with the under. I think you might counter and say, once the book is out on him a little bit more and teams can kind of see how they can attack Zach Edey, maybe they'll be able to kind of get him off the ground and out of position and get more foul calls. But the way that he's so big and he doesn't need to be like in a player to really defend at a high level. I'm going to go with under on Zach Edey, 4.5 over under fouls per 36 minutes. He's at 4.7 now.
I don't have a really good reason to do this other than I'd like to disagree with you. So I'm going to go over. I think he's going to, a couple more big minutes games, a couple more, big foul opportunities and foul outs, and who knows, it tilts the numbers a little bit. I think you're right. I think he's only going to get smarter positionally about how he needs to play. But I also think your point about maybe as the book gets out on a little more, more teams figure out like the best way for us to go at this is not to try to get around him and then worry about like Jaren Jackson Jr. slicing in from the weak side to, you know, erase the shot. It's just to go through his chest and see what happens. I mean, I think a lot of times that might not serve you so well, but yeah, you get the referees that are not on your side on Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, maybe they'll be on my side on this one. So we'll go over just because, you know, we're coming to the end of this 2024 and I feel it's been a little bit too placid with me and you. I feel like we got to get some rancor and some division in here before the year ends. And this is me airing my grievances with you, Tom. I got a lot of problems with you people and here we're going to go.
Dude, Zach Edey, he is not soft. This dude is, he's playing really well. And Draymond Green found out the hard way about, you know, calling out this dude because he's soft and what happened after that. He's been so impressive. It's been great to watch and hope he gets back onto the floor soon and rings in the 2025 with another, you know, stellar 20 game stretch here. 15 straight games with a positive in the plus minus column. To reiterate, never been done before by a rookie since 1996, since we started tracking this, and hasn't been done this season by any player in the NBA other than Zach Edey, 15 straight with a positive plus minus. Dan, thank you so much. This has been a pleasure. One of the great things that I've looked back on in 2024 is doing this show with you and doing it for the audience. Thank you for joining me every week on The Big Number. And thanks to all those who have already subscribed and have listened to this. Salute to you. And also give us a 5-star rating. Tell your friends, subscribe, and share this on all your platforms. We'd really appreciate it. Thank you, everybody. And thank you to Joe and the entire team behind the scenes for getting this produced on a holiday. Again, please subscribe, rate, review, tell everybody. We'll be back next week with another episode of The Big Number. But until then, have a wonderful holiday season. Be safe. Be responsible. Have fun out there.
Happy New Year, everybody!